Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Dual Screens Podcast. We are continuing our horror game coverage here in October of 2020. I am one of your hosts, Stephen Fontana, and with me, he's actually not in the other box. He is just a disembodied voice. He is a little cartoon face. He is Andy Asimakis. How are you, Andy?
You know, I've played a lot of horror games in my life.
Indeed.
Stephen.
Yes, you have.
But I think this one today is a very special one.
Interesting.
And I cannot wait to place my order and dive in.
Interesting. And with us this week is Blake Reibel, the 3D modeler and level designer of Scythe Dev Team and developer of Happy's Humble Burger Farm, a fast food horror sim. Blake, welcome to the show.
Hello, guys. How you doing today?
We're doing the thing, you know? We're doing the thing. It's spooky, spooky month. Been playing some spooky games, watching some spooky TVs things, and I'm excited to dive into this. I'm not a spooky person. I don't like to do the terrifying things, but you know, Andy likes to drag me through
it's
it.
My favorite month of the year.
Yeah, October's the month for us. I'll tell you that.
For those of you that are new to the Dual Screens Podcast, this is the world's number one indie developer interview podcast, probably. Everyone in the gaming industry, be it a programmer, an artist, a voice actor, it doesn't matter. They all have a story to tell, and we want to be their podcast to do it. The show posts each and every Thursday for your listening pleasure on your podcast service of choice, including our home Podbean. But it's also on Apple Podcasts, Google, your sister's ass. It's all over the place. And you can watch the video version of the show on youtube.com/dualscreensTV. And if you are watching on YouTube, please hit the subscribe button, hit the thumbs up, maybe leave a comment, you know, do the whole thing, hit the notification bell, you know, all the stuff that every YouTuber asks you to do. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please consider leaving us a review because it helps the algorithm find us and tell people, hey, you like games? You like interviews? Well, check these guys out. So yeah, do us that favor and do that as well. Okay. So Blake, you got Happy's Humble Burger Farm coming out. I was just dabbling in Happy Humble's Burger Barn. And you know, the game is a fast food horror sim. Now, as a person who worked in the food industry, how did you know that that would instantly create a horrific horror atmosphere?
We truly didn't. it's one of those things that we consider ourselves pretty much fly by the seat of our pants. We come up with a concept, and then we want to capitalize on that concept. It wasn't anything that was predetermined from start to finish. One day, you know, we had the idea of, hey, let's make a drive-through game. So we made, you know, a drive-through and a car coming through and orders thrown out the window. And as you might have noticed, there is no drive-through or cars coming through in Happy's Humble Burger Barn. So it just sort of transformed into this horror game. You know, all three of us are huge horror fans. You know, we've seen them all, and we love them, and we try to make everything as scary as possible because you're battling a lot of mainstream games now, and sure. Horror, you know, doesn't have really that big of a mark on the video game industry,
right?
So we wanted to see if we could sort of leave our mark in the video game industry, just doing horror stuff, what we love, you know.
I think the real horror of this game is wondering what a salmon nugget must taste like.
They do exist, though. That they do. It started off as a joke because we didn't want to do chicken nuggets, you know, and then it's the new game's going to feature, you know, a couple more, you know, a couple different food items as well, but it will still feature the infamous salmon nugs that I don't recommend trying those.
But I think you touched on a very important topic I wanted to get into at some point this evening, but we're already here.
Yeah, we're just here, man. Let's do it. Yeah, we're at the bridge. Let's jump off.
What do you got? Like horror, like back in the early 90s, like in the PS1 era of gaming, horror was like this huge booming genre in gaming.
Mm-hmm.
And now I feel it's not as important as it used to be or impactful. Well, why do you think that is?
Personally, I think that is because the expectations and the mindset of the average gamer now has been spoiled by super high quality graphics. You know, they're exposed to stuff like, you know, any 10-year-old now knows what a green screen is. So back then, we, you know, being in our later 20s, we're naive to the process. And so I think that why, you know, we watch movies that are older horror movies and they look cheesy now, understanding what CGI is capable of, we sort of, you know, lower or raise our expectations on what a horror game needs to deliver. And that's when you look at a game, you know, that comes out and you're like, this is a horror game, but it doesn't scare you. You know, on the flip side, there's different types of horror, like, you know, you PUBG, for example. It's not a horror game by any means. But when you're getting sniped at after spending 30 minutes looting or something, your adrenaline gets going. You're scared.
Absolutely.
You want to preserve your only life that you have. And so we started deep diving into what makes games scary and why it makes games scary. And we use that every day in our development process.
Yeah, I've watched even play Fall Guys. I know what that must feel like.
Listen, yep. We get them dubs, okay? That's all I got to say.
Yeah. I still haven't gotten one yet.
Oh, I've gotten dozens. One of the things that I've noticed, especially recently in the last maybe 6 or so years, is that when the horror genre gets a really great game, it sells like crazy. Like when it really hits a home run, when it starts to really travel, like the original Dead Space, when that first came out, that sold. And it are obviously warranted, you know, sequels and yada yada. Resident Evil 2 Remake, when that came out, that sold like hotcakes. And then boom. Or actually, it really started with 7, if you think about it. But, you know, these things tend to kind of get away from people. You know, you have Soma. That's a huge, huge game out there for horror. Outlast was really cool. But, like, when these things happen and they do hit and they are done the right way, they do have an audience. So I don't know if it's necessarily that they're not as impactful anymore. I just think that it's, like you said, it's a desensitization of the audience that's just getting much more difficult to pull the wool over, you know, their eyes. It's like that's why I stay away from them, and I pick and choose very rarely when I play something like that. Like right now, I'm planning on in the next week or so, I'm planning on finally playing Resident Evil 7. I've been holding off on that for a long time because I know it's going to be a special moment. I played Until Dawn. I really loved Until Dawn, and now I'm playing Phasmophobia, as we said before we started recording. I just think that it takes something. I want to be wowed, and I want something, a special experience. And booting up Happy's Humble Burger Barn, I didn't know what the hell I was expecting. And then, you know, you're just sitting there making little burgers for these absolutely horrifyingly, like, mannequin-looking murderous humans. But, like, your anticipation starts to build while you're just doing these mundane things. And then, boom, when things start to go awry, there is... You are being led on this little, very, very short leash through this very unsettling situation, right. Which is not something I was really expecting to happen. I mean, you read it, and everything you read about the game, it's like, oh, this is great. But all the descriptions of the game are just like, oh, yeah, it's a horror fast food sim. Like, what? How does that even – okay, I guess. So
– Yeah. It's one of those things where this game specifically – you can ask, you know, out of 100 people, you can ask what you liked about it the best. And more often than not, all of them are going to give you different answers. Whether it be the effects, you know, flip where the PSX effect was removed. The fact that it was in a simulation, the story, just serving customers, the scare sequences, you know, there's a lot of different ways to like the game, but, like you had mentioned earlier, you know, you had said there's a specific crowd for a specific audience for horror. And that's because I believe that to thoroughly enjoy horror, you have to go in with the immersive mindset. Right. And that is probably our biggest focus, is keeping the player immersed. You do something that breaks their immersion, the game no longer becomes scary, or no longer is scary and becomes unfun. Mm. So that's a huge thing we focus on, is keeping that immersion so that the player forgets about their surroundings and just, you know, focuses on what's going on, so that we can throw a scare at them or two.
Yeah, and I like how you draw us in with that PS1 era of graphics at the onset. It harkens back to how games like A Clock Tower or An Echo Knight or A Silent Hill or A Hell Knight or Resident Evil Alone in the Dark, they used very lo-fi, low-poly assets, and yet were able to actually scare people with very little. And again, you're hiding limitations of hardware at the same time with those effects.
Right.
And you think, okay, this is going to be, you put you in that proper mindset where you can expect almost going in.
Yeah, the PlayStation effect is one thing we've always liked. PlayStation is all three of our favorite era. We grew up on it. We love it. It adds sort of a rawness to the game, where, you know, the higher the graphics, the higher your expectation is. Mm-hmm. So you know, people around our age are more inclined to go into it, you know, already lowering their expectations. And I don't say that like, you know, we're shooting low, but they lower their expectations, so they automatically like the game because it's in the PlayStation, you know, graphic. But we can also get away with the cheesy little jump scares, or like, you know, Steven said, where the completely deformed, weird looking customers come in and
it's just unsettling from the very start. Like, even like just the music, no
real face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, what's going on with his eyeball? Like, that's weird. Okay, cool.
The lazy eye. Yes. Yeah.
Moving on. Why are they all the same person? Oh, this is good. Why did they just leave me $100 for a hamburger? Okay, whatever. Yeah. It's fine.
Or for just one french fry.
Yeah, or like a box of french fries, and you chuck it at their face. Ding! Yeah. Yay, we did it.
Exactly.
Do you, like, I also feel like, in especially in the PS1 era, you know, you things were a little bit more scarier because you could actually see and do less. So anything that was happening had to be very calculated and very specific. Whereas now, you have draw distance where you could see beyond anything. And, you know, like very famously, Silent Hill had the fog, right? Yep, the fog made it impossible to see anything. And that created a incredible atmosphere. And right here, in this one little experience that I was having, it's everything's kind of like, you need to go up into a poster's, like, right all up inside it so you could see what the hell you're supposed to do. And just immersing yourself in that cone of vision, or when you're throwing out the trash and then the door kind of slams behind you, like, you're so focused on picking up the trash and putting it in the dumpster that, you know, you're not hearing or seeing things happening around you. And, you know, it's almost like you're using the hardware to your advantage when you're setting up scenarios like that. Whereas like a brand new game, you might have to hear more, or you might automatically see more, or be able to do things faster or cleaner or whatever.
Yep. And I completely agree with you, because Silent Hill actually plays a big role in Happy's Humble Burger Barn as far as the aesthetic. You know, there's going to be more density in the air, and it's really going to take on a completely different atmosphere, being bigger and more in depth. And, you know, when it comes down to it, like you had said, people expect these certain mechanics like Silent Hill to immerse you. And that's what we tried to do with the tasks that you have to do, you know, break your concentration and go do this. Mm-hmm. And so we can set something up for you without you paying attention. So that was pretty much the mindset of that. But I agree with you completely. Back then in the PlayStation games, it was more skill-based. You know, how many millions of people right now are playing COD and you know, Fortnite? It's press E, you know, to pick up stuff and shoot. But back then, you ask these kids playing Fortnite right now that are super good, top of the league, how to jump a chasm in the original Tomb Raider, I guarantee you that's going to stump the heck out of them. And that's the stuff we like, is the calculated, you know, walk to the complete edge, jump back, run full sprint, and jump just to make that chasm jump. And that's what we want to do.
And you guys also have that average everyday man aspect going, how it's not this battle-hardened hero that you lead. It's just like most of us can connect with a fast food job growing up, mm-hmm. and even more so creepy shit happening in that fast food job while we work it.
Yeah, if you've ever worked a night shift, it's scary. Very much so.
Especially by yourself, like, oof.
Right.
Like, that's basically, you basically made Waffle House the simulator. You walk into a Waffle House at 2:30 in the morning, you're like, is anybody working? Is there somebody here? And the guy's like sitting there in the corner by the fryer just reading a magazine.
I do want to address one thing that was on my mind when I'm playing this game, like, for the 10th time. What is with the sound that the garbage makes going into the trash?
Yeah, so that's... trash bin. Yep, that's... pretty much everybody has a reaction on their LCs about the loud sound at the trash can. It was one of those things. We did make this game in under a month. I think it was 23 days we made this game. And it was just overlooked. and we pushed it and we went, it's kind of scary. After our first LP, we saw it. And their reaction was like, okay. But then playing through it again, you don't expect that. And we pride ourselves in not doing the jump scare. As right. you could have saw, there's no things popping out at you. You know, it's all very creepy. And so that was kind of like our, do we fix it or do we leave it as a jump scare? So you'll see every LP that's out there, they all jump and they, you know, some laugh and then some get mad. And you're like, you're just mad because it scares you.
So here's what you can say. You can say, Blake, for future interviews, once you guys are ultra famous, that you were trying to subvert the jump scare trope in horror films today. That's what you're doing there.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just one of those things where we didn't want to rely on the stuff that most horror games try to do. We wanted to sort of break away from it. And you know, you really only have two directions to go with horror, and that's jump scares and just immersion creep, and mm-hmm. and you know the like Phasmophobia, the, you know, there's no real jump scares until, you know, unless your video like you posted on your Instagram, Steven.
But that's the only time that's ever happened. I mean, every once in a while, like, you'll get something pop up, but it's not mm-hmm. its intent isn't to jump scare you.
Exactly.
It's just kind of doing its thing and moving around. And if you happen to be in the right spot for it, because it's not scripted moments, right? It's based right. on, it's reacting to what you're doing in the game, which is really special. And that's something that's really special when it comes to horror games in general, is when you know when a horror game is making you, is funneling you into a trigger point, right? Where it's like, okay, do all this stuff, the music's starting to swell, and there's the door with the flickering light. As soon as you open that door, it goes into like a weird cinematic while he's opening the door, and then bah, the monster's there popping out of an air duct, and you're like, ah, no! Right? Like, it kind of like leads you in that direction, as opposed to letting you come to that air duct your own way, or figuring out your own way, you know, to get to that point. And going back to the garbage noise, I just thought he aggressively threw the garbage out. So I just picked up the next two and chucked them in as hard as I could. I was like, yeah, fuck this trash. Boom. Yeah, get him. Boom. It's like, slam the lid. All right, we're out. Let's get out of here. And then, doors. Oh, investigate the noise. You mean the noises I just made?
Okay, yes.
Sure.
I never thought of it like that. But yeah, you know, it was... something we did notice right away, and something we chose to keep. It added a little bit of character to the game. You know, it's not perfect. We're not perfect. We're indie devs, and having stuff like that, you know, in our eyes at least, shows that you know, we're human. And you know, my favorite thing as a kid was glitches and, you know, breaking the game. Easter eggs, stuff like that. It just shows that humans made this. You know, they had a sense of humor, and some people get it and some people don't. So,
well, that's just part of the charm, I feel. And it's why this game is so special, and it caught the attention of Tiny Build. And we can go into the next step in this game's evolution, this now quote-unquote full version coming out. What's that been like for you guys? Describe that journey for us a little bit.
I mean, it's just like every kid's dream to, you know, they wake up loving baseball and they want to join the majors. You know, it's just like it started out, you know, as a hobby. You know, John and Caleb collaborated on music for years and years. And I've known Caleb for going on 15 years now. And so it was one thing where we sat back and went, we want to make video games. Where we couldn't find anything to play on Steam, you know. John and Caleb have dabbled in some Construct 2 work, strictly 2D work, and said, well, you know, I can pick up 3D modeling and let's make some games. We've all had similar interests, and we woke up going, let's just do this for fun. We carried out full-time jobs. We came home, did it, you know, in the evenings, and just released stuff. We made games for us. And to have someone like Tiny Build approach us, interested in the idea, something we never expected. Mm. Never expected anything to come out of Happy's Humble. You know, truly shows our dedication and our love for doing what we do is the fact that we get the biggest rise out of watching people play our game and how many downloads we get on itch. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, that simple fact, donations are always appreciated. Everything that was donated, we put back into our games. We never took anything for profit and used it for anything other than making our games better. And so to have to work with Tiny Build, it was very intimidating at first because we're like, yeah, we don't know what to do. You know, our first game came out just about 3 years ago. And we didn't know what to do in this situation. We didn't know how serious they were. And, you know, obviously we knew of Tiny Build. They are very big. But it's always nerve-wracking to get approached by someone who's that big. And it turns out that these dudes are wicked cool.
How did that go? How did they reach out to you? How did they find the game? How did they, like, what was their pitch to you?
It was Markiplier's video, actually, his LP.
Oh wow.
Alex, you know, he saw that video specifically, and we got to talking. And when it comes to the development of this game, the single-handedly coolest thing about this whole process is we are 100% in control. We have 100% creative control. We do not have to approve anything. We do not have to, nothing from them is given to us as far as assets, music, anything like that. It's all in-house by a site dev team. And, just the fact to have that I don't know of any other situation that was more perfect, you know, so it's been amazing so far.
How does the mindset change now going into making a quote unquote full version? Because you guys are used to these little snippets, like these vertical game slices. And to you, a full version is it's about half an hour to an hour of a game, more or less.
Exactly.
And now it's okay, make a full version. What does that mean to Scythe Dev Team?
A lot, especially since people are asking for it. You know, it's one of those things. Our biggest attempt at a full version game was Walls Closing In. We spent an entire year in development on that game, and it took Iberlizzi 3 hours and 45 minutes to play through it. It's a very time intensive game, very difficult. You know, we didn't want to make it easy because it would have just been a 30-minute game. But here's the thing: is our ideas are always so big that we choose to do this and get it out in a month or two. We don't sit here and go, oh, we're, you know, this idea is done. We can't do anything more with it. Ship it. We just want to, you know, keep face, if you will, keep putting stuff out, different ideas. And we knew that one day one idea would get snatched up. And turns out it was Happy's Humble. We had no idea. So it's something where you want to make this your life. You want to do what you love doing for the rest of your lives. And we didn't expect it, so that just made it 10 times better.
That is so damn cool.
It's so cool because, like, I feel like you guys are hitting, like, so many different points of the current zeitgeist of what's going on in gaming. I know you said, you know, this is 3 years ago, but, you know, streaming is huge now. Retro is huge now. People like to be scared on camera. As part, you know, like it's a very entertaining thing to watch, and it's kind of like this happy little marriage and this like little mixture. And also you have these publishers that specifically look for talented indie developers now that they could bring under their wing, because the more that they can amplify those teams, the more they can get out of them, the more the richer everybody gets. You know, it's just as simple as that. Like, you're looking at, you know, Devolver Digital, Tiny Build, some of them are escaping my brain right now, but like there are so many out there that we get emails for, and they seem to have a game coming out every other week. You know, just kind of looking and oh, who's this dev? Oh, this is a solo dev from Poland. You're like, oh, okay, cool. Like, what's his story? And then, you know, you kind of dig down, and that's what's so cool about this show, is that that's who we seek out too. Like, we seek out the guys or the guys and girls, the teams that maybe haven't been noticed yet, but it's a game that we think looks really cool, or we've already played it and we think it's awesome, and there's a story there that should be told. So you also have like the podcast people now and everything like that. It's just a weird time to be creating games where people want lo-fi stuff now. They want, like, have you had an audience that like ask you for an actual PS1 disc of this game?
No, I feel like that's
totally something that you guys can do. Runnable on a PlayStation
That is your limited run edition for this game, by the way.
Absolutely.
The PS1 classic jewel case with the little manual you gotta pull out from the little teeth in the jewel case.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, that is extremely flattering, because that's our ultimate goal is to mimic that PlayStation 1 feel. You know, I don't know how familiar you are with porting to consoles and stuff like that, but that's, you know, time for that has come and gone, unfortunately. Yeah, and no, that's why stuff with, you know, publishers, you know, Tiny Build, that's all, you know, pretty much done in house. It's great, because who wouldn't want to see, you know, your game on the shelf in GameStop or Walmart, you know, who wouldn't want to see it on consoles and play it as much as you can. You know, it's not about the money. It's just about the being able to say, I created that. And you know, it's to the point now where we're sitting here giggling like little girls, because you know, someone's cousin's nephew's friend's kid came up to them and said, have you seen this new game about making burgers and it's scary? And we're getting to that point where that's the success, to be known for something like that, to have over 10 million views on the top, you know, top dogs YouTube channels of our game. It's, we couldn't ask for anything else, really.
How do let's get into Burger Farm. Let's get into the game a little bit more. How is it? Tell the listeners who maybe have played Barn. How is it different? What are you guys expanding on? What are you kind of pushing in this new version?
The new version, it's going to have a lot more story, a lot more game time. You know, obviously, we want it to be as long as possible, but you got to cut a game when it starts getting boring.
Sure.
But everything you can imagine is elaborated on. You know, just since Happy's Humble at the beginning of this year to now, our techniques have doubled, if not tripled, and we're able to do a lot more optimization. Unfortunately, we had a lot of complaints with the optimization of the simulation sequence in the original, and that is something we have grown to fix and focused heavily on, especially since we want it ported. But when it comes down to it, it's just going to be a lot more intensive, a lot more things to do, a lot more like owning your own restaurant. And that'll be where a lot of the gameplay comes in. And not to mention, you know, if you guys have seen the trailer, there is actual AI now. Right. A lot of people are expecting the cow to do something in the original when it teleported to the drive-through screen, but it didn't. Like I said, there's a lot of stuff you can do in a month, and writing a full-fledged seamless AI is not one of them.
And, yeah, that cow is, pardon the pun, going it's going a little ham there a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm like, it can move now. It's walking around. It has a personality.
Yep, another one of those, you know, intentional expectations where we expect the player to always keep their eye on her, and she never does anything. So you can see in the new trailer that she does stuff now, and you don't want to make her mad. I can tell you that.
Oh my!
So it's a lot more intensive.
Yep. I didn't like how they were all the little teeny ones were just scattered about. I was like, oh my god, is this going to be like these little? It's going to be like we're going to like the movie The Gate. That's what it felt like. It's like, oh my god, they're coming out of nowhere. They're going to take me and drag me into hell. I don't like this whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah, that was our start of a collectible system.
Interesting.
But we then sat there and went, so what happens after the collectible system? So now they just make funny noises. There are a couple of collectibles throughout the restaurant, you know, just dealing with music, and music plays a huge part in our game. Mm-hmm. John is one in a billion. That dude can rip. He, you know, it doesn't matter what Caleb and I do. If somebody doesn't like the game, my God, they love the music. It's every comment is this AI could be better, but the music kicks ass. And it's like, all right, you know, that's one thing. At least you like this for the music. So very, very, very proud. And I love working with John. He's great. And he does all the story too. You know, Scythe Universe is his idea. He's been working on it for years. He has developed everything from the slasher. You know, when you sit here and you hardest thing to do is think of a name for a character. You're sitting there going, all these names, you know, they're just generic or it's too hard or whatever. And man, John just pumps them out, and they always work. They catch on. Everybody, huge fan of Crystal in the Northberry Grove series. For obvious reasons, and it, you know, couldn't do this without him. The simulation flip, you know, John's idea. It's this lore where we could spend years on the Wikipedia and still not even scratch the surface of how much is to this game or this universe, rather.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing, because when I go back and I watch like a lot of these iconic slasher franchises.
Mm-hmm.
With my brother, because he and I both adore the classic films like Jason and Freddy. And we just do like a deep dive on just the lore, and we ask like the dumbest questions. Like, why? It's okay. So Jason has to go into a relative to be reborn. It's like you're trying to apply grounded real world logic in this piece of the fiction that makes no sense in reality. Like, well, he's a zombie now. He was dead first, then lightning brought him back to life. And I like it when a game like yours, there's like, it's very minimalist, but there's a lot going on in the backdrop and underneath everything. And once you start to peel back the layers, that is also equally scary than the game itself.
Yeah, I mean, and that's again, part of the immersion, you know, all the people who, you know, we get numerous YouTube comments, numerous people in our Discord that are like, what happened here? What happens next? Mm-hmm. You know, and, what, just when you think that, you know, something, you don't. And, that's, John's really good at that. He's got that mindset. I can guarantee you all three of us put together have not seen more horror movies than that guy. He knows his stuff, and it makes it for ease, because the stuff that you don't think about in a video game that you have to create on the fly, he has it there and ready. And so it's sort of like digging. And the Northberry Grove trilogy, you know, we started that game because we're like, it'd be cool to have Michael Myers as a character. And, you know, we were all quite new at our respective programs. We use Unity and Blender. And, so one day Caleb's like, look, I got this guy to follow you. I'm like, okay, cool. And then I go, look at this chair I made. And if you fire up Northberry Grove, you can actually, the first chair I've ever made imported into a video game was the one around the campfire. And if you watch the legs on it, it's bad. It's a horrible model. I'm surprised the game, you know, even runs, because of how maxed out, you know, your GPU probably is during it. But it turned out to be a hit as well. And people liked it. So
this chair takes 10 teraflops to properly render on your screen.
Doubt it. Yep, I wouldn't doubt it. So we were all new, and you can actually see the visual progression we've made just from Northberry Grove to Walls Closing in the year and 8 months, I believe, between that development cycle.
Yeah, but that just speaks to the passion. It's like you have the idea and the know-how and like the willingness to do it and to get it out there. And you're learning along the way. And I think all of your fans see that, and they appreciate you more for that aspect. Like, you're not trying to sell them anything more than what it is, in a sense.
And it's just like you said, when the whole crowd's screaming at, you know, the band on stage going, encore, encore, you go out and play an encore. And that's, you know, that's sort of what we're feeling, where everybody's playing Happy's Humble Burger Barn, and we went, it's a fun game. Yeah, we made it, you know, a game because we wanted to make a game about a restaurant, a drive-through simulator. All three of us have worked in restaurants, and but we didn't know why it was such a hit. And you know, until this gentleman by the name of Alex comes into our lives and tells us why it was such a hit, and we went, oh, okay, that makes sense. We just didn't see it that way, because we weren't focused on selling the most copies. We're just focused on making a fun game. And now that we know what makes that game fun over, you know, the other 29,000 games on itch, not saying they're all less fun than Happy's, but what makes that different than the other games? And so we were able to really dig deep into that.
What did they communicate to you about what makes the game fun? I'm just curious, like, what were their words?
A big one was the feeling of success. You felt successful doing something, you know, and that was serving the customers. And something so simple like that is just like in relevance, is like Animal Crossing. When you pay off your mortgage and then you get a bigger house, that's that feeling of success that keeps people attached and keeps people playing. And so a big problem was that you only had a certain amount of customers. So that's also being discussed in the newer one as well. But the story behind it, the fact that it was a simulation, you know, you were in the flip, the aesthetic flip. We can't name many games that has such a drastic aesthetic flip like that. There are games, you know, like Titanfall 2 that you transfer worlds and, you know, you get that fuzz around it, but it was something you weren't expected in something like Titanfall 2. They tutorialize that. So just a shock like that all around, you know, you watch it like a movie, and that is one of the main selling points of the game. So we pretty much threw a bunch of ingredients in a pot. It worked, and we now know why. And those were the reasons.
You know, I put that visual flip on par with what Spec Ops The Line did psychologically back in the day. Like, yeah, it was that jarring to see, because you're so nestled in that PS1 environment, and it's comforting in a sense. And even though there's some strange shit going on, you feel a modicum of safety in that classic realm of graphics. And then when it jumps, it's like all bets are off in a sense.
Yeah, and it's funny because something, you know, like that as being a huge selling point was something as simple as Caleb going, "Look what I can do." And he flipped it in the middle.
Showing right? off, basically.
Yeah, and we were like, "Hell yeah, that's awesome. That is awesome. That is staying. You do what you need to do to make that happen." And, you know, John came in with this whole backstory, wrote all this lore to it. You know, he had a very, very huge impact on why the game is what it was. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with our other title, Senile Showdown.
Mm-hmm.
That one didn't do so well. And there wasn't any story behind it. One day, Caleb and I were chatting, and we were like, "It'd be funny if you're an old guy in a senior citizen home fighting your way out to escape." And we're like, "Yeah, that sounds funny. It sounds awesome. Let's do it." And so that was what Happy's was sort of more than likely leaning towards until John came in with his you know, story additives. This is what we should do. This is why we should do it. And you know, Caleb and I looked at each other and went, I love it. And you know, Caleb codes everything. Caleb is the Unity guru, and I just try to make the games look as pretty as possible.
How do you guys one up that? How do you outdo that moment?
So what we were told was you know, a lot of people download a game, a lot of people played it, a lot of people saw it, but that's, you know, there's still such a huge untapped market.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't rely on the you know, thousands of people who have downloaded and played it to not like it. So we're still going to stick with the same thing as of now, sort of the same effect, but it's not going to be what you guys think. Mm-hmm. Okay. It'll the flip will happen, but it'll be in something completely unexpected. And it'll be in a different way. So we're taking the same ingredient and plating it differently.
Oof, that is, I love that. That was really good.
And that's what we're trying to do, and just stick with what we were told, what works, you know. And like I said, all of our ideas, it's a problem, because if we put all of our ideas into one game, the game would be a bigger download than, you know, Call of Duty Warzone is right now. So we have to tone it down a bit and make sure that everything makes sense.
We're going to add zombies. It's got zombies now, guys.
Zombie burgers.
Pretty much.
All right. Yep. So we're going to move on to our rapid fire section in a couple of moments here. But real quickly, tell people how they could play Barn and when they could expect more information about Farm.
All right. Happy's Humble Burger Farm is going to be available on Steam October 29th. It'll be the playable teaser, also known as the alpha, for which we are looking for feedback. We're looking for how you liked it. Links, you know, are all over the internet. I don't personally do social media, but scythedevteam.com. There's scythedevteam Twitter. It's all over there. It's all over Tiny Build. Happy's Humble Burger Barn is available on itch.io. We have a profile on Itch as well, Scythe Dev Team. Look us up, follow us on that. Huge following on that. You get devlogs, you get updates. We also have a Patreon, so feel free to subscribe, and you'll get exclusive rights and insight on the project as we develop it.
Awesome. All right, Blake, this is everybody's favorite segment, and it's about to be your favorite segment. This is rapid fire. This is when Andy and I are going to throw some questions at you, and we're just going to get your off-the-cuff answers. We're gonna test your mettle. We're going to see what kind of beef you're made of, as it were. So I'm going to give you our first question here. Which fast food restaurant has the best burger?
I'd say In-N-Out.
Mm. Ooh, okay. What kind of food gives you nightmares?
I'm not a fan of tuna casserole.
Yeah, that's a good answer. Mm-hmm. That's a good answer. Mm-hmm. That's a good answer. Would you rather have the power of flight or invisibility?
Invisibility.
Mm. Good answer. Mm-hmm. How many fast food workers do you think wish they could throw food at their customers' faces?
Every single one of them.
Correct.
100% is the answer for sure. If you could own your own fast food chain, if you could like be the owner of a fast food chain restaurant, which one would you choose?
Chick-fil-A.
Mm. Ooh. McDonald's fries or Burger King fries?
McDonald's all the way.
Mm. Yeah, they never go bad. They just can stay like fries forever. Yeah. Describe what is your favorite burger topping? Your non-conventional favorite burger topping?
Cheese. Oh, non-conventional.
Non-conventional.
Non-conventional probably be, I'd have to say I do like coleslaw.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yes.
You do that like a pulled pork sandwich, but put it on a burger.
Sure.
Pretty good.
Sure. Oh, yeah. It's a good one.
Okay. If you were ever caught dead, where would it be?
I don't know. Probably at my house. Spent a lot of time on the computer.
Mm-hmm.
What's the dumbest way you've injured yourself?
Thought I was really cool when I was 4 years old and took a speedy turn on my bike that I just took off the training wheels on.
Nice.
And still got the scar on my foot to this day.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Would you rather have every snail on earth always crawl towards you at all times, or have one of your hands turn into a muffin?
Does the muffin regenerate?
Well, listen, that's yes. So if you eat it, it will grow back.
Oh man,
it's brand. It's a brand muffin. It's a brand muffin.
Brand. Okay. Well, at least you'd be regular.
Oh, it's a brand muffin. Yeah. We'll have to go with the snails. I'm in Arizona, so we don't have many of those out here.
Yeah, but they're going to get you eventually. They're always walking towards you.
They're always coming at you.
That's fine. Scythe will find another modeler.
Get some salt.
The chairs, Blake. The chairs.
Yeah. Yeah, probably snails.
Okay.
What would you be more excited for? Flying cars or colonization on Mars?
Probably colonization on Mars.
Now, a little disclaimer. We had a hentai game on the show last week.
We did, yeah.
So
you had your last podcast said that.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
Yep.
So some of these questions may have into from last week's
here we
rapid
go.
Fire, so just so you know, might be a thing.
Okay.
Would you rather watch porn with your parents or of your parents?
Ooh. I'm married. I don't watch porn. I'd rather watch it with my parents.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that could be a funny experience.
Have you tried that before, Mom? It's pretty,
didn't say anything about talking.
It's true. Loopholes.
Well, after that, we're talking again, so.
All right. Blake, close your eyes. You picture yourself first thing in the morning. You get up, you go to the bathroom, you do your thing, and now you're going to put on your pants for the day. What leg are you putting in your pants first?
Left.
Given the chance to reboot or make a sequel to a beloved yet forgotten horror game franchise, which one would it be?
The Suffering.
Ooh, yes.
That is a huge inspiration of mine.
Great answer. Yeah. I miss those games so much.
They were great.
God damn it. God damn it. Like.
Yeah. That's one of the scariest games I've ever played in my life, the original.
Yeah. Speaking of terrifying things, would you rather have to go into fisticuffs with a horse-sized duck or 10 duck-size horses?
Ah, man, that one's a hard one. Probably the horse-sized duck.
I feel like that fucker... I still think people are are underestimating the fact that that's essentially a dinosaur. You essentially be fighting a dinosaur at that point.
Yeah, but they don't have large talons. So.
This is true. This is true. They got them little webbed flappers.
He's thought about it, yeah.
Yeah, I got it. I got it.
Would you rather watch a 12-episode documentary on your own sex life, narrated by your own parents, airing on National Geographic, or be shot in the upper thigh, close to the ball region?
Oh. Wow, that's a strange... Okay.
It is, yes.
Did it sever my femoral artery?
You'll live. Okay. It might graze nuts on the way to the thigh.
I'd rather get shot, yeah.
Yagi. Do you think aliens have ever visited Earth?
100%. And they're laughing at us.
Yeah. that's for sure.
Yep.
We forgot to ask you one of our most important questions. That is, do you prefer pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
Yes. Mm. Hawaiian is a very good pizza to me.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And is cereal a soup?
No, I've heard this debate. I do not believe it is soup.
Okay.
Oatmeal, though, might be because it is cooked in water and broth is a water.
Oh.
Interesting.
So,
but couldn't you call milk a cold broth poured on cereal?
You know.
and then he left the chat.
But I don't. Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't call it that because I'm not an idiot. Next question.
I do not. So. Making me think here, guys.
That's what it's all about.
There's only a couple more here. So.
No, if good. You could have unlimited storage of one thing, what would it be?
Unlimited storage, probably data.
Okay. Mm. Look at you. Ahead of the game there.
Well, yeah.
Thinking ahead.
Sell it. Yep.
If you can create one thing just by snapping your fingers, you could create this one item. What would that item be?
Man. It would probably be, I don't know. That's a good question. Create one item that I want.
It's a one-time power. It's almost like having a genie say, here, give me, you got one wish. We'll make the thing and the thing will be here and then it's your thing and it's yours forever and it'll work forever.
Man, that's a tough one. I don't know. That's a printer that never breaks.
you're thinking big. I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
Man, that's a problem I've been having lately.
Yeah.
What do you know isn't real, but badly want for it to exist? Suffering 3.
Yeah, pretty much, right? What do I know doesn't exist? I don't know. Not a very out-of-the-box thinker here. What do I want? That's a tough one. Yeah, I don't know, guys.
That's okay.
I don't know. That one, you stumped me on that one.
All right, it's okay.
All right. I got one more. Then Andy, you'll hit him with one more, and then I'll do the final question, the ceremonial final question.
You got it. You got it.
Would you rather be eaten by the horror monster, like shredded open and eaten? Would you rather be stabbed to death by the slasher? Or would you rather be... No, I guess those two are good. Those two are good. Would you rather be slashed by the slasher or eaten by the monster?
I'd rather be eaten by the monster, because the second he goes to rip me open, I'm going to pass out.
Oh, okay.
So that'll make that quick and painless. You know, I don't personally do too well with IRL gore and stuff like that. You know, so can't go into hospitals. So that'll make it easier.
All right. What's my last question before the other last question? I didn't want to ask you who's your favorite like horror slasher villain, but I'm going to pivot a little bit.
Pivot.
Who is?
Was that Friends?
Mm-hmm. It is Friends. 100%. Yeah, baby.
I don't model without Friends on. They all give me crap for it, but I don't model without it on.
Who is your favorite final girl?
Oh.
In all of horror.
I've always went to the, you know, Jessica Biel. Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Chainsaw Massacre, yeah.
That was...
It's a pretty competent remake, too, that film.
Yeah. But, yeah, she's a looker. So, have to go with her.
Andy, what's your answer on that?
Oh, man, that's a tough one, dude. Like, I think I want to say... Nancy from Nightmare on Elm Street has a lion cam. She does eat in the third film, so there's that.
Well, mine is Sydney.
Sydney Prescott.
I think Sydney Prescott's got such a cool story arc there, and can't wait for the next.
And she's back. She's back for the fifth one.
Oh, it's crazy! I'm so excited. Oh
my God, what's old is new again, and what's new is awesome.
I was recently talking about Scream to a friend of mine who's got a 13-year-old daughter, and they were like, what are appropriate horror movies for 13-year-olds? And I was trying to remember, I was like, I think I might have been 10 when I saw Scream, and it was such a cool, fun movie to be a part of when that came out at such a young age, where like horror movies still like were scary, but they were cool again. Like like Jason and Freddy were no longer cool when those movies came out, you know, like the horror genre, the scary slasher stuff, it became a parody of itself with Chucky and Freddy and all that stuff. And then Scream comes out and it's like, oh no, this is purposely making fun of the fact that horror is no longer scary. And then it is also scary. Like it was weird, but
the issue there is like when you're growing up alongside horror, the villain is no longer scary to you and you're now rooting for them to kill. As you're getting older.
Yeah.
So it presents a weird issue where this is no longer scary to me. But Scream had the slasher aspect, plus there was the whole whodunit part of it as well.
The whodunit part's the best part.
Which made it great.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whodunit part's definitely the best part. Okay, the final question, Blake, and then you can get out of here. You have our permission.
You're good.
This is an extraordinarily difficult question, and probably the most important question you've ever been asked in any interview and or any conversation you've ever had. This is more important than, you know, do you take, you know, wife lady to be your wife lady? And you're like, oh yeah, I do. Way more important than that.
All right. Let's go.
Shake it out. Andy, you ready for this, Andy? Oh man, I always get so nervous when we ask this question because you never know what kind of answer you're going to get, whether it's going to be honest or it's going to be bullshit. Okay. Very simple binary answer. Andy or Steve?
Have to go with Steve because he's sharing a screen.
There you go. That has won several times.
Is that the only reason?
That has won
his ugly face.
That has won it for me several times. Yeah. Okay.
Like in solidarity, we're both hiding behind the veil of secrecy here, Blake.
This is true. You both are. Ladies and gentlemen, that is going to bring us to the end of the show. This has been an awesome show. If you like this show, you might like our other show, the Dual Screens Gamescast, where Andy and I go over all sorts of gaming news that we curate and then yell at each other about. It's a lot of fun. It's on the same channel. You don't have to go anywhere. Just scroll down a little bit and boom, you'll find the latest episode. We're also doing seasonal content. You could check that out on YouTube. Right now, we have our first episode of Cast and Call, where we are casting video game movies, and we just cast our Metal Gear Solid movie. And I gotta be honest with you, my cast is way better, and you can let us know if you think that that is true or not. If you want to support us on Patreon, you can do so by going to patreon.com/NDS podcast, just like our Patreon producers, Colton Nessler and FNH Paul. We cannot continue to grow without all of your support. Thank you so, so very much. And again, you get bonus episodes, all sorts of goodies just for joining for $1. If you want to follow us on social media, we are at NDS Podcast. I am at Batchow27. Andy's at PantsGuy. Our Twitch is twitch.tv/dualscreenstreams. My Twitch channel is twitch.tv/Batchild. And you can find everything that we're doing on dualscreens.com. Now, Blake, I know you said you don't do the social media thing, but do you want to pitch any of your social medias or anything like that right now before we say goodbye?
Yeah, we have a Discord we're very active in, open to all fans. It's the Scythe Saga Discord. Feel free to join, ask us questions. Like I said, if you join our Patreon, we only have the $1 tier. That's just to gain access to all, you know, insight, developer comments. You can actually pitch ideas for the game as well. Caleb Alfada and John Riley, they both have social media profiles, very active. The Scythe dev team does have its own Twitter as well. If you could follow us, that helps out a lot. We support all the other indie dev teams, share each other's stuff, want to keep you guys as updated as possible. So looking forward to your following, and let us know if you have any questions.
Awesome. Well, that's going to bring us to the end of the show. Thank you, listener. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Blake. And as always, please be excellent to each other.